Welcome to the April podcast. This month, I'm joined by Dr. Christina Haggerty, chair of the National Wheat Improvement Committee, to discuss their recent flying in Washington, D.C., as well as the committee's top priorities and FY 2026 appropriations request. We also hear from American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval, who outlines the organization's policy priorities for 2025 and highlights their ongoing mental health initiatives supporting farmers during these tough economic times. Finally, we wrap up the episode by introducing NOG's newest team member, Anthony Pena. Tune in for timely updates and key conversations shaping the future of U.S. agriculture.
I'm joined by Dr. Christina Haggerty, Associate Professor at Oregon State University. Christina leads a research lab dedicated to supporting producers and stakeholders of high-quality Oregon wheat. She also serves as the chair of the National Wheat Improvement Committee. Christina, we are excited to have you on to talk about the recent NWIC flying held in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here, Elizabeth, and I look forward to catching up with you today.
So to start off, could you give our listeners a more in-depth overview of what the National Wheat Improvement Committee is and what your role is as chair?
Absolutely. So the National Wheat Improvement Committee, or NWIC, we are 24 voting members that comprise public and private researchers for wheat. And our job is really to be the advocacy branch for federal research. There's federal research dollars specifically. So we have a fly-in each season, each year, where we visit members of Congress and really highlight the impacts that research dollars have for growers, food security, and the bigger picture of wheat.
So as you mentioned, every year NWIC has an annual fly-in. We just recently hosted NWIC's annual fly-in here in Washington, D.C. to discuss NWIC's FY 2026 appropriations request. Can you walk us through why this fly-in was held and what key priorities and messages members brought to the Hill?
Absolutely. So each year we set a list of legislative priorities to outline goals to the overarching mission is to support a robust and competitive wheat industry. And we have a list of priorities that range in dollar amounts. So probably number one on that list is the U.S. Wheat and Barley Scab Initiative. And our goal is to have that funded at a $15 million level. We also have the Wheat Resiliency Initiative, the Small Grains Genomic Initiative, and the National Rust Initiative. And so while these different research areas have different focus areas, the whole goal is to just support wheat research and the economy of wheat in the United States. So our key takeaways were that the priorities that we highlighted overall had a very warm reception. A lot of our office visits really served as an opportunity to educate curious and receptive staffers about our mission. It was clear to us that congressional support for the Ag Research Service continues to be strong. And no office really supported this idea of privatization of wheat. Wheat remains firmly a public sector commodity. And, you know, in addition, a personal highlight for me was getting to meet with Elizabeth Dent. And we also had a very productive meeting with USDA ARS leadership. So this includes the new leader, June Park, of course, Oswald Krasta, Mike Ulmer, Arnold, Nora Lapton, and Jeffrey Silverstein.
So in terms of timing, why do you think it's especially important now for researchers, growers, and ag industry representatives to be speaking to members of Congress directly about the importance of agricultural research funding?
Great question. It's important because the things in Washington, D.C. are changing so fast with the current administration. And so it's important for us to highlight how our mission aligns with the goals of the current administration and help educate and inform Congress about our mission and how that impacts food security, export market of wheat, and a safe and healthy food system for Americans.
So let's talk about the bigger picture. Why is re wheat research such a critical component for helping growers maintain profitable and resilient farming operations?
Another excellent question. So wheat is unique in that the bulk of research progress happens in the public domain. It happens with taxpayer dollars. If we think about other crops like corn, soybean, canola, cotton, a lot of that research happens in the private spaces. Private research companies. And that is because of the monetization of different herbicide resistance traits, genetic modifications that are not present in wheat. And so, for that reason alone, if we think about the USDA ARS and we think about universities, that is where for wheat is conducted.
So before we wrap things up, is there anything else you'd like to highlight for our listeners? And what are the next steps for NWIC as we move forward with the FY 2026 funding efforts?
So I think our next step is just going to be understanding the future of USDA ARS and its role and highlighting how critical the Ag Research Service is to deliver traits, epidemiological studies, quality. All of these upstream critical things and how they impact farmers.
I'm joined by American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval, a third-generation farmer from Georgia. President Duval and his son run a beef cow herd, raise broiler chickens, and are actively restoring their family's farmland that has been in their family for over 90 years. He's been at the helm of Farm Bureau for nearly a decade, playing a key role in shaping the 2018 Farm Bill and remains focused on helping Congress deliver a new long-term farm bill that supports the needs of today's farmers and ranchers. President Duval, welcome to the NOG podcast.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Well, the pleasure is mine. To start, I'd love to hear what Farm Bureau has been focused on this year. I know you recently testified before the Senate Agriculture Committee, along with our former president, about the economic challenges facing producers. Could you share some key takeaways from that hearing and highlight any other major initiatives that Farm Bill has been that Farm Bureau has been focused on this year?
Sure, and I think I had the opportunity to touch on just about everything that we've been had a hard focus on. Of course, we're always ready for anything to pop up, but to go to a hearing like that and be able to share right in front of the senators was a great opportunity to let the farmers' voice be heard. So in that hearing, and the things that we've been real focused on is the impact of tariffs to agriculture. Of course, our main mission is to be the voice of agriculture in the legislative arena, but that part also includes making sure the administration knows how what they their plans, how that will affect agriculture so that they can massage them or tweak them to minimize that damage. And I think we've been very successful in that area, and we had opportunity to talk about that. Economic disaster and disaster relief was a topic because we have been kicking the farm bill down the road for 2 years now, and on three, going on three, and that has created economic disaster in our communities, our farm communities. I talked about that, and also the terrible natural disasters that our farms have experienced too. We also talked about needing a new modernized farm bill. We all know that COVID paid its toll on America and America's families, but it's also paid its toll on small businesses and farmers and ranchers. And the farm bill that we passed in 18 was a good farm bill, but it's outdated now. Things are different. We live in a different world. Input costs are higher. We have to have a modernized farm bill. And then, of course, coming up this year, one of the key things that we want to talk about and push forward is renewal of the tax reforms that happened in 2017. In a lot of cases, those tax cuts was the margin that our farmers was able to keep their farm running and feed their families on. And we got to focus on keeping those up. And then, of course, the biggest problem we face in agriculture is our workforce. We got to have available labor, not just seasonal, but work year round. And we got to work on those issues and talk about how we can fix that problem for the future, because it is the biggest limiting factor that we have. And then continue to talk about what we do overall, whether it be regulation, whether it be conservation, whatever it might be, financial or environmental sustainability for our farms, and also sustainability for our food source for American people, because we are national security to the American people.
Well, thank you for going over that. I know NOG and Farm Bureau, we are very aligned on a lot of those. So we'll definitely keep our members updated, you know, as you guys continue to work on all those things. So you mentioned the ongoing struggles with the farm economy. You know, those are taking a serious toll, not just on operations, but also on the mental health of producers. We know that farmer suicide rates are estimated to be 2 to 5 times higher than the national average. As a producer yourself, can you speak to why this crisis exists and what barriers rural communities face when it comes to accessing affordable, quality mental health care?
Sure, I'd love to talk about that. And I have talked about that a lot, along with a lot of my counterparts across Washington and across America. You know, this one became personal to me after I lost my wife back in 2000. I was one of those cold, crusty farmers that go to the meeting and say, we don't talk about our feelings, until I had to experience something like that. And I'd say the two events in my life that put me into that arena was my wife's loss of my wife, and when my son went to Iraq to serve in the war. And those type things, along with financial pressures, along with family pressures, whatever that might be, puts people in a position where they doubt themselves, they're not sure about themselves, and they don't want anybody to see it. But I'm here to say it's okay not to be okay, but only if you're willing to talk about it. You got to talk to others, and because that stuff will build up in you like a pressure cooker. It did in me, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I mean, for years and years and years, I thought I was strong enough to handle anything. We can't handle everything on our own, and we need to share it with others and seek out resources that we need to help us get through difficult times like that. So I would encourage people that we got to get rid of the stigma that goes along with mental health. We got to be willing to say, hey, look, you know, I'm having a problem. And not only if you're the one having a problem, be willing to talk about it, but be a friend, neighbor, or whatever, to see that in someone else and reach out to them, whether it be take them to have a cup of coffee or ride down the road, have a conversation, and be all ears and let people just talk. Because sometimes that's all they need. That's all I needed. I needed somebody to let me talk to them. And once I got that pressure off my chest, things started getting better. And so it's not just going through it. It's being an observer of people that's going through it and trying to be a friend and help them. Because that's, you know, in our faith, we're supposed to be kind and helpful to others. And there's no better way to help someone than to open up your ears and let them talk about the stresses that they're experiencing.
Well, thank you for talking about your personal experiences. As you said, you know, it's so important that we have these open conversations to reduce the stigma. So given these challenges, how is Farm Bureau stepping up, you know, to support our nation's farmers and ranchers and helping them to, you know, manage their mental health and, you know, and connect them with resources?
Sure. You know, and even before I experienced some of the things that I experienced to put me in those areas, we had already started as an organization in a direction to to create some vehicle to provide resources for our folks. And, you know, it's really became evident to me that we needed to do that and put more emphasis and time into it when one of my employees came to me and talked to me about one of her friends back home that was in the dairy business losing her father because of the stress, the financial stress that the family was under. And I said, that's terrible. We got to do something to try to help people through that. So we ended up being involved in what we call Farm State of Mind campaign. And it is a place where people can go look for resources and help. And then we, you know, over the years, we've partnered with Farm Family Wellness Alliance to fill that gap, even further fill that gap for those to provide those resources. And it has been very well accepted, and a lot of people have used it. And my prayer is that we've helped a lot of people along the way and prevented them, helped them through some difficult times.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to mention about Farm Bureau's mental health initiatives? And for those who want to learn more and access support, where should they be going?
Sure. That Farm State of Mind campaign, you can go on and find it, but, you know, and talk a little bit more about the Farm Family Wellness Alliance. It provides a farmer or a person, doesn't have to be a farmer, anyone, opportunity to self-help and self-assessment, and also to get some free access to free counseling. If you're a farmer in America, you can go on this program and get free counseling all over. And I think that's really important for a lot of our farmers. And it's all very confidential. So nobody really knows that you're doing that, and it's monitored by professionals. So and part of that program is called Together for All. So if you go to our website, that would lead you there. It's fb.org/Farm Bureau State of Mind, and look for Together All, and the Farm State of Mind program will provide resources to you to help someone else or for you to help yourself with it. So we hope that will encourage people to go to that webpage and receive that help that they need. And of course, we're all here as friends and neighbors. You know, I look across, as I travel across America, especially behind the natural disasters, I see farmers and ranchers coming from their farm the very next morning with chainsaws and skid steers, and the people that work with them being there for their neighbor to help them. Well, mental health is no different. It's a storm in our head, and we need to be there for our people that's having difficulties with those storms in our life, and being able to point them to these resources that we have, or either just lend an ear to them and listen to them and let them talk to you. It is our job. It is our job as friends and neighbors and family members to look out for others. And hopefully they're looking out for us too. And we are in a very difficult time. And we're here at Farm Bureau, and I know NOG is too, working every day to try to smooth those ups and downs in agriculture out, to have a minimal effect to agriculture. And we're doing that each and every day. But we also are here to help them through other difficult times.
I am excited to welcome NOG's newest staff member, Anthony Pena. Anthony joins us from Vancouver, Washington, and previously served as the Government Relations Manager for the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association. We are thrilled to have him on board and are looking forward to the experience and energy that he brings to our team. Hi, Anthony. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Well, as I said, we're very excited to have you on the team. So let's get started with your background. Can you tell us a bit about your professional journey and what led you to NOG?
Yeah, no, thanks. So before NOG, as you mentioned, I was working as a federal lobbyist or as a government relations manager for the Pacific Northwest Waterways Association, otherwise known as PNWA. PNWA is a maritime trade association based in Portland, Oregon, but we have membership in Oregon, Washington, Idaho. In that role, my primary responsibility was working on Oregon coastal projects, but even more so the inland Columbia Snake River projects, and more specifically, the Lower Snake River Dam issue, which I know a lot of wheat growers, especially in the Pacific Northwest, are very familiar with. And so that's actually how I sort of got introduced to NOG initially, was through the work being done over there by the Washington Association of Wheat Growers, the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and also the Idaho Grain Producers Association, as well as all three states' commissions as well, too. And so that's how I got introduced to the world of wheat. And glad I did. Made a lot of great connections and friends over there in those organizations and also within NOG. And so when this position came about, I thought it was an amazing and perfect fit for me, just given my experience and also connections in that world. But looking forward to learning more too, because again, my background really is in the maritime transportation supply chain space. And so looking forward to learning more about wheat and learning more from our growers as well too. Prior to PNWA, I worked for Senator Patty Murray from the state of Washington as a district director, and prior to that as a representative, and that was for almost about 3 years. And that was based in the state side. So I wasn't on the Hill as a congressional staffer. I was in the field, actually, out in the state, working in Southwest Washington, which is where I call my home currently, in the Vancouver, Washington area, as you mentioned. Prior to working for Senator Murray, I actually worked for a state senator based in Vancouver, Washington. So I was in Olympia, Washington, the state of Washington's capital. And I worked for, her name was Senator Cleveland, and I worked for a session for her right before the pandemic hit. And so that was a really a fun time to start, or at least before everything started. That was right before everything started closing down, and right as session was ramping down, the world shut down all of a sudden. And so that was a really fun experience. And then prior to working for Senator Cleveland in the state of Washington, or the state Senate, I did a lot of campaign and organizing work for different political campaigns and different organizations, on and off after college. And then I attended Eastern Washington University, Go Eagles, and studied urban regional planning there. And so that's how I really, also too, if you're familiar with Washington State and Eastern Washington University specifically, it's also in the heart of really Eastern Washington and also wheat country as well too. And so went to school around a lot of rolling fields of wheat as well. And so I guess I don't come from a farming family and agricultural background, but no matter where I go, it seems to find me. And so just really excited to be doing the good work that needs to be done for the organization and continuing to work in a capacity that allows me to do that as well too. And so really excited to be joining NOG.
Well, we are so excited to have someone with such an extensive background. And also, I went to school out there in the Pacific Northwest at University of Oregon. So it is great to have another person on the team who is from the West Coast and also from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, we really punch above our weight class. I mean, even if, we don't have a lot of, even if you're, and this is just the political nerd in me, you know, looking at our congressional delegation out in the Pacific Northwest, you know, we have a lot of, both on the Democrat and Republican side, a lot of senior and really really great representatives there. So yeah, glad to be from the PNW.
So for folks who might not be familiar, what issue areas are you going to be covering in your role here at NOG?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. And so if folks were familiar, and I know a lot of listeners who are familiar with NOG knew that Kyra Franz, who was previously with NOG, was here on a part-time basis, but really worked on a lot of really important issues. And so I'll be taking over for her portfolio. And those specific topics are around climate and sustainability, conservation programs, environmental regulations, water, soil, and air quality issues, climate markets, renewable resources and renewable fuels, and also endangered species issues. And so I don't know if, I know folks are probably aware of this, but just to share again, Jack Long, who is with NOG, is going to be going up and working on the Hill. So definitely very bittersweet, definitely sad to see him go, but also really excited for that new opportunity. But with him leaving, that also leaves opportunity for additional coverage on the issues that he worked on. And so I will also be assisting on any coverage assistance with his portfolio. I know a lot of issues related to transportation was stuff that he worked on, as well as a lot of different issues. And so myself and Jake will also be working on coverage assistance. And so definitely stepping in on the transportation side, as that is an issue of expertise of mine, given my previous experience, as I mentioned.
So that is a long list of issues that you will be covering. What are you looking forward to most as you step into this new role?
Yeah, no, that's, I think a few things. I'm really excited to join an organization with a national footprint You know, working, not that I didn't certainly appreciate working at the regional level, and there's certainly a lot of value to that. I'm just also really excited to expand sort of the footprint on the work that we do, and also continuing the work on working within a trade association that has members. You know, I come from a trade association world that has over 150 members, and they're all very different with unique needs and wants. And I'm looking forward to continuing sort of that work in this with NOG, knowing that we have just as much of, if not sometimes even more membership, and also with diverse views and needs as well too, depending on state by state and industry as well. So really looking forward to learning from our members and being able to serve them. And then most importantly, or maybe that's most important, but also, you know, most excitedly for me, I'm really excited to move to the Hill and really be in the middle of all of the action, so to speak, especially during really critical times like these. I know if anyone is aware and just opens the, you know, reads the news, I was going to say opens the paper, but I don't think people read the paper anymore, more so the internet. You know, a lot of stuff's happening, especially in the world of ag. And so I'm really excited to be moving out there and being able to, you know, be in the heart of the action and being able to be a part of that. So really excited.
Well, we are really excited to have you move to Washington, D.C. I know Jake and I are a little lonely in the office as Jack departs. So to wrap things up on a fun note, what is one interesting or unexpected fact that most people might not know about you?
Yeah, no. I think, you know, I actually, so one really interesting fact about me that not a lot of people know is I actually grew up in Hawaii. And so my, although my dad was in the military, my dad was never stationed out in Hawaii. He actually was out of the Marine Corps by the time that we moved. My uncle actually started a company out there and was very successful. And my dad assisted in starting up that company. And so that's why we ended up living in Hawaii before moving to the Pacific Northwest when I was about 12. And so got to grow up in a tropical paradise and never forgave my parents moving us. I'm just kidding. I'm glad we moved. Definitely miss it. But luckily, if you live on the West Coast, airfare is pretty cheap to go to Hawaii. And so there's a lot of deals. And even on the East Coast, you can get a deal. It's just a longer flight. So just going to have to get used to that. So no, grew up in Hawaii. Probably the most interesting thing about me. Otherwise, I'm just a political nerd, hence why I became a federal lobbyist.
Thank you for listening to the April podcast. Make sure to keep up with us on social media and our website at wheatworld.org.